Hello and welcome to another Premier League preview podcast exclusively for you guys here on Patreon. As ever, I'm joined by Lewis Ambrose. Good afternoon to you, Lewis.
Good afternoon, Andrew. Another week gone.
I know. Time is flying by. Time flies when you're having fun, apparently, and two wins out of two is quite fun.
Yeah, we are having some fun, aren't we? It's odd. It's a little bit too nice.
Are you feeling a bit disconcerted? Like, it's that sort of thing, you know, that people go like, hey, you know what? Everything in my life is quite good. I've got a good job. I love my kids. Nice car. Decent wife, to coin a phrase. But something must be about to go wrong here. They're just waiting for it to go wrong. I hope that's not the case this weekend, obviously.
No, hopefully not. Lulled into a false sense of security, I think. At least we learned this week that upon reflection, pulling someone's hair is not something you should do on a football pitch.
That's true. Were we talking about that last week?
No, that happened since we last spoke.
Of course. Sorry. Sometimes I forget what I've spoken about the minute I commit the audio to a file.
I was even, as I'm sure most other Arsecast listeners, then a little bit disappointed that you and James recorded on Sunday last week before all of that unraveled. So I would have got up on Monday morning, would have sort of reached lunchtime, and I'd have then sat down and listened to Arsecast Extra and listened to you and James talk about the madness of Sunday's game.
Sure.
But obviously, yeah, we didn't have that.
No, I mean, if you've been following James's Instagram and his many and various costume changes, you'll see that he's a busy man at this moment in time, playing various characters from throughout history. So we're doing another Sunday one this week as well. So we won't get the madness of whatever happens against between Liverpool and Manchester United on Monday.
True.
But maybe there's something in the works for Patreon members that might fill that gap. We'll just have to wait and see. But yes, it was good of Mike Dean, wasn't it, to realize after the fact in his well-paid newspaper column that he had in fact got it wrong, and pulling somebody's hair is genuinely a foul.
It's lucky as well, because what else would he have written about if there was no controversy? As you say, he's got a number of words that I suppose he's supposed to fill. That's an interesting idea, isn't it? Paper column maybe does better the worse he does his job and the more teams he fucks over.
Is he doing one every week, though? Is that what's happening, or?
I don't know. I don't know if you can find that out quickly, but I was very surprised that why referees are not allowed to do interviews after games or anything.
Mm.
A guy who now sits in front of a screen and decides penalties and red cards, but isn't, I guess, a referee that's on a pitch anymore, is allowed to talk to the media. That feels a little bit strange to me. Yeah, so he obviously he'll create more traffic to his articles or to that particular column anyway, the more controversy there is, which is genius as a business plan.
I can't see for sure whether or not this is going to be something he does on a regular basis.
That'd be something to look forward to, wouldn't it? More Mike Dean.
Yeah. I mean, it is great. It would be great for what am I going to write about this week? Fuck. Okay. I know what I'll do. I'll just ignore one player punching another player in the face and then afterwards go, you know what? Actually, via the medium of my column, I've come to learn that kind of thing is not acceptable.
Having reviewed the laws of the game, turns out that was actually quite violent.
Who knew? Who knew?
I've seen quite a few people this week say that it shouldn't be a red card, or not surprised by the decision. I'm amazed. I've never considered someone yanking someone's hair anything but a red card. It feels like such a malicious act that I had no idea that could even be a debate.
I didn't know that there wasn't a specific rule within the game for hair pulling. I wonder, because of the greater prevalence of long hair in the women's game, if that is something that I don't know this for a fact, but that referees in women's football, the minute they see that, would probably go, right, that's fucking foul. I don't know if you're getting sent off, but they would be more inclined to give that foul. Whereas it is not as prevalent in men's football. You've got your woolly guys like Fellaini. You've got your kind of David Luiz, Guendouzi types, and a sort of, I don't know what Cucurella is, a kind of shaggy poodle type fella, you know, but it's not really. Most of the guys have their perfectly sculpted hair. They've got, you know, short back and size, whatever it is. So you don't have that as much. But I mean, wasn't there...
And there's not a single referee in the Premier League who could judge how painful it actually is to have your hair.
Yeah, they're all baldy bastards.
The vast majority, if not everybody.
I say that as a baldy bastard myself. But wasn't it Louis van Gaal who said... when Fellaini's hair...
Yeah, that stuff belongs in the bedroom, basically.
Yeah, he said it's, you know, if you like, it's only acceptable in sex masochism, is what he said, which is...
He also, in that interview, because he said that, and that obviously stole all the thunder, he also, in that interview, threatens to pull the reporter's hair to prove how painful it is.
He's a funny guy. Do you remember the one where, like, he was trying to show the referee that somebody had dived, and he basically just threw himself on his back?
That was against us, wasn't it?
Was it? I can't remember.
I think that was against us, yeah. Obviously, let's not talk about our many trips to Old Trafford in that period.
Sure, we've got one to come in the near future. We'll have some conversations about that. So we're looking ahead to Bournemouth this weekend, and it is, I think, on paper, a good chance for Arsenal to get another win under their belts. We'll talk a little bit more about the opposition. We'll talk a little bit more about the game. But a few bits and pieces that were quite interesting from Mikel Arteta's press conference, if I can find my browser window, which had Mikel Arteta's press conference quotes in it. And let me just start with Marquinhos, a guy that it looked like he was going to go out on loan, but Mikel Arteta seems to suggest that he's going to stay with the team. Where is it? Marquinhos, I'm very happy. He's adapted well. He's a really likable figure. He's got the qualities for how we want to play. We'll keep him here for another few months and make sure he establishes himself at the club and in the team, and afterwards we'll see what the best movement for his career is. So, you know, potentially, let's say, a loan move in January, but they want him around. Maybe they want to sort of integrate him properly, get that Brazilian group, you know, help him settle in, help him learn English. He talked a little bit about that as well. But also there is, of course, the Europa League group stages where potentially he could play. He wasn't involved with the under-21s, and some people thought that means he's going out on loan, but I think we had our quota of over 21 players playing in that. I think you can only have three, so we had Cedric scoring a free kick against some child in goal. And then we had Fabio Vieira and Emile Smith Rowe in there as well. But quite interesting about Marquinhos.
Yeah, it is. I think it makes sense as well, firstly, I think, on the personal development kind of level, where, as you say, integrating him in the squad and with the other Brazilians in the squad as well. So that those relationships build. It also makes sense when we have got the Europa League group stage. We'll hopefully have a few League Cup games as well. So there's a lot of time that he will get on the pitch that it doesn't usually happen in the second half of the season for players on the outskirts of the squad. Maybe the problem is Nicola Pepe, because of Marquinhos playing in that position that Nicola Pepe likes to play in. And as long as Pepe's at the club, he's not starting league games. Can you not start him in the Europa League as well if they can't move him on this? We've got about just over a week left in the transfer window. Can you not play Pepe in the Europa League games as well? Like, it's one thing for Saka to be ahead of him. It would be another thing altogether for Marquinhos to then get minutes ahead of him.
I mean, if they can't move Pepe, they are going to have to give him those games in the Europa League. Not just, you know, not just for like consideration of the player, but if you are thinking then at some point, like, we do need to sell this guy, if it comes to next summer, he's got a year left on his contract, another season where he plays like 600 minutes, you know, his value gets lower and lower and lower. I mean, there's nobody out there for him at the moment. I did see Sevilla had their right winger suffered an injury, which might open the door. There was some talk about Sevilla. But if he doesn't go, he's got to play the Europa League games, at least from the perspective of, okay, give him minutes. And if Saka, we need, you know, to give him a rest, or if he gets injured or whatever it is, we do have somebody there who's a little bit more match fresh.
Yeah, exactly. So that could be in Marquinhos' way a little bit. And it's all, you know, it's very exciting when we see new signings and we want to see them as much as possible. Mm. We want to get an idea of how they play and what they could offer us. Having said that, even if Pepe stays and Pepe's playing the Europa League games, I think, you know, Marquinhos is maybe coming off in the, off the bench in those games and playing 20 minutes or something. Mm. That's still valuable. And I don't think that personal development kind of aspect to keeping him around can be undervalued either. So, I don't think anybody was expecting us to get any real football out of him this season. If he plays a few games, if he gets off the bench a few times, those Europa League matches or in the cups, and then in January we can still loan him out somewhere and he can play regular football that way, then everybody wins, I think.
Fabio Vieira got his first minutes during the week as well. Another player I'm really quite interested to see and to see where exactly he's going to play. Apparently, by instruction of Mikel Arteta, he played on the right. There's another impediment to either Nicolas Pepe or Marquinhos or both, depending on where Mikel Arteta sees him. I mean, he spoke last week about him playing in the same position as Granit Xhaka and saying he would give the team something a little bit different from Xhaka. And we might come to Xhaka now in a minute as well. But good to see him. And he is available. Smith Rowe played 45 minutes. Vieira played 45 minutes. Mikel Arteta confirming today that they are available for selection. Ben White was in training during the week. So whatever forced him off against Leicester doesn't appear to be too serious. So this clean bill of health thing is quite promising.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting this weekend, isn't it? Never change a winning team. The players that we've seen so far haven't given us any reason to make changes either. But it always feels like Mikel Arteta likes to change at least one or two players. So it's quite interesting, I think. We've saw a lot of Mikel Arteta changing at least one or two things every game. But then when we're on a run, he seems to enjoy keeping it quite steady until somebody gives him a reason to be dropped or to maybe shuffle things around a little bit. So I imagine that they'll continue to be as careful as possible with the likes of Tomiyasu and Vieira and Smith Rowe.
Ease them in.
Yeah, like we won't see too much different this weekend. And again, I think the team haven't given him any reasons to make changes, especially the way that we went behind, the way that we conceded against Leicester both times last weekend. And then there was an instant reaction, like we just clicked into one extra gear, which has been a problem with this for Arsenal for a few years now. I don't think we've had gears. There's not been when the game demands something, you know, to kill a team off. Those gears haven't really existed. And that's really, really promising that we did that last weekend with the same players on the pitch. Sure. So I don't think there'll be too much different this weekend. And it is just refreshing to have all of these options. I mean, we looked last week, we had, compared to the opening day against Palace, it looked like we had a real bench that if someone came off injured or if we needed to change something, there were options there. And this weekend, that'll be the case even more so with Smith Rowe and Fabio Vieira. So hopefully we're on the way to having a squad of players where we have one or two options or two or three options in every single position.
Yeah, I'm just wondering who comes in or who misses out on the bench for Vieira if he used to come in. The bench last week was Matt Turner, Kieran Tierney, Rob Holding, Tomiyasu, Smith Rowe, Albert Sambi-Lokonga, Mohamed Elneny, Eddie Nketiah, and Nicolas Pepe. I mean, if you had to put your money on one player missing out, who would it be?
When you say for Fabio Vieira, then I'm minded to look at the attacking players. But if you line up with Ben White at right back, who can come in at centre half, and maybe Takeru Tomiyasu could play at centre half as well, then I would personally be quite inclined for Rob Holding to be the player that probably misses out. And especially with the five subs, give yourself an extra option off the bench. If we did, for some reason, want to shift to a back five as well, you've still got Ben White on the pitch. You've got Tomiyasu who can come on. We know Tierney can play in a back three. And maybe you can go that way and have Zinchenko or Saka outside him or at left wing back. Or Martinelli, we've seen, obviously, play in that sort of almost wing back-like role with a back three at the end of last season at times when we were chasing games. So I think to maintain as many options as possible in as many different positions as possible, Holding would, for me anyway, probably be the one that I would pick. I don't know, would you take out one of the attacking players for an attacking player?
No, I wouldn't. I'd have another attacking player on the bench if I could. But I think you're right. Holding, if I was Rob Holding, Mohamed Elneny and Albert Sambi-Lokonga, I'd be sort of a little bit nervous in training this afternoon before the manager put up the team sheet. I think it could be one of those. I mean, maybe Sambi, I don't know. Elneny, it'll be interesting to see because it'll tell us about where he wants this squad to go and what sort of mindset he's going into these games in.
I also just think in terms of cohesion and you see it in the latest episodes of All or Nothing as well, Holding and Elneny are the guys that are least likely to have an issue.
True.
I think they really value what they can offer the team without necessarily being on the pitch or in the squad.
Yeah.
And I think those are the two guys that are least likely to kick up a bit of a storm, and maybe sulk a little bit. I think they would turn up for training on Monday and still give absolutely everything with smiles on their faces.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. Like, there'd be less hassle with either of those two. I mean, there was a moment, wasn't there, in All or Nothing when I think they're sitting there eating and Sambi is talking about, you know, obviously says something about not playing, and Eddie Nketiah is like, shut the fuck up, man. You think you're the only one who's not playing? So, you know, he's a young player and he's sort of chomping at the bit to get out and to perform and everything else. But, you
especially
know,
with what, like 10, 11 days left in the transfer window, like, what do you do if you then don't have Lokonga even on the bench for a game? Do you get a call from his agent asking to go out on loan or something? Which is something I'm sure Arsenal don't want. So maybe your decision even changes a little bit when the transfer window's closed compared to when it's still open.
Bukayo Saka's contract came up today and Mikel Arteta is very confident, he said. I'm very confident that we as a club, Bukayo and his family and his agent, are very much aligned on what we want to achieve. I'd like to get that done because I don't want any player distracted, etc., etc. So that's a positive development. Well, not a development as such. We assume that those talks are ongoing, but it is one of those statement things that could happen before. I mean, it doesn't have to happen, of course, before the end of the transfer window, but he was asked about that as well. And he was quite interesting, where he basically just said, if we find the right person and the right player, good. Otherwise, there's no point. Like, there's no point, is what he said about incoming transfer business, unless they're convinced it is the right player. And I get that. I think we've had too many experiences of bringing in either the wrong player or the wrong person or both at the same time. And you can understand why they would want to avoid that. But Saka, you know, as a team, as a club that looks like it's going places, he is the star, he's the jewel of the academy, et cetera, et cetera. You know, getting him tied down would be a real statement from the club that, like, okay, we've now got players that lots of other clubs would want, and we're keeping them.
It would. I think we've gone through so many of these sagas as a fan base as well. Will he, won't he? You go all the way back to Walcott and Van Persie the year after him, Nasri, all around the same time. To have a young player, a player who's just Bukayo Saka, just make that commitment to us for the next 5 years, I guess it would be. I guess that's what Arsenal would push for anyway. It would be massive. I don't think it would be massive in and of itself, because I think we've got a lot of good players. But it's the fact that it means he won't go anywhere else. And Bukayo Saka staying at Arsenal as arguably our best player, it wouldn't just be losing him if he didn't sign a new contract and he went next summer. But we'd be losing him to one of the teams that we're chasing. I'm sure would almost definitely go to Liverpool or Manchester City. And then you sort of turn around and you're like, well, how the fuck are we meant to catch either of them if our best player's leaving us to go to one of them?
Sure.
So, yeah, it's huge. That connection, we've spoken so much, and you've spoken even more with other people on the other pods as well, about that, the atmosphere and the connection and fans falling back in love with the club again almost over the last year or so. And so much of that could be destroyed so quickly by losing a homegrown player. And so much of that is, I think, you know, baked into the fact that we've got a few homegrown lads playing for the team as well, and young players that seem to really care and have grown up with Arsenal. So yeah, it would be huge. And I don't have any worries either about his form, just because he hasn't scored in the first couple of matches of the season. Oh, I mean, we've all talked about, we're looking good on the other side of the pitch, and teams will adjust and start worrying about those late Granit Xhaka runs into the box, or Gabriel Jesus peeling out wide and swapping positions with Gabriel Martinelli. And as soon as teams shuffle over and are a little bit more worried about protecting that side of the pitch, Bukayo Saka is going to have space. And I'm really, really excited to see how this team develops when we have threats all over the pitch, because we've talked about that so much last season. Everything came through Saka.
Yeah.
It felt like everything came through Saka, or for a time that Saka-Odegaard axis, and that was where the threat was, and maybe occasionally from the other side with Smith Rowe or with Martinelli. To have a threat on the left with a left back who's so comfortable in possession and a player in Martinelli, or maybe sometimes Smith Rowe ahead of him, who looks dangerous so often, and then Granit Xhaka in this new role driving into the box. And I mean, even if people doubt what he's capable of, it's still something defenders are going to have to look out for, a guy arriving in the box.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask about that, because, you know, you're talking about a threat from the right, a threat from the left, but like a threat central? That's something different. I'm kind of curious from a tactical perspective, having looked at, you know, the two games that we've played, what you make of Xhaka's role and the instruction. It seems to be sort of platformed on what he did last season, where all of a sudden he was playing further forward. All of a sudden he was playing in pockets where he didn't usually play. And now it's more again, like he's arriving, he's getting in the box, he's getting on the end of things, as we saw against Leicester with the goal, as we saw with the header from the Saka cross, etc., etc. So clearly something that's obviously instruction. The arrival of Zinchenko, I think, has played a part in that, and allowing him that freedom, if you like, to get in there. But you know, there as you said, there was a time, like, if you stop Saka, you kind of stop Arsenal. And now it's like this mighty trident that we have, with Saka on the right and Martinelli and Zinchenko on the left, and the middle spike, if you like, is the rampaging Granit Xhaka.
And who'd have thought Jesus.
That? Yeah.
Yeah, I find it really, really interesting. I think this is sort of an evolution of things we've seen before. And I think that's so interesting with Mikel Arteta and the way we're playing generally, is we know how we play, like, that everyone's supposed to be in certain positions at certain times, but we also know that became quite predictable. Arteta's not interested in changing the way he thinks about football or anything like that. And I think the next step was to evolve. And it doesn't just mean, you know, Xhaka's position and his role now. It was, you know, we had that thing where people get fed up of him being like a left back, right?
Sure.
He's still at left back now, but nobody talks about it anymore, because sometimes he's driving into the box from the middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
And it's all based, it's no longer based on, it felt like before it was like Kieran Tierney goes forward, Granit Xhaka goes wide, Smith Rowe comes inside, and that's it. Like, those three parts move in that way.
Yeah.
Well, now you've got Jesus drifting wide, and then Xhaka will go and stand in his position, and then Martinelli will come over from the wing, and Xhaka will drop back again. And when Zinchenko's further forward, you still, you know, especially in midfield, really in the middle of the pitch, you still see Xhaka in that sort of what you'd maybe term the left-back zone, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just those moving parts. There's just more moving parts have been added. And instead of Xhaka shifting into one position when one player does one thing, it feels like that entire left flank now, and I'd include Jesus in that too, they all move together, and it's really, really interesting, I think, to see that work. And there'll always be someone hugging the touchline, but sometimes it's Jesus, and sometimes it's Zinchenko, and sometimes it's Xhaka, and sometimes it's Martinelli. And it was the case for quite a while, I think, when Arteta arrived in the first year and a half. It just was Kieran Tierney, and that was it. And then Kieran Tierney was injured, and Xhaka played left back, and then it was Martinelli on the touchline and Xhaka coming inside. So the flexibility and the different options, and I think you watched the game last week and you see it was actually Yuri Tielemans sort of playing opposite Granit Xhaka, I guess, as Leicester's right central midfielder.
Mm.
And the number of times, the first half especially, the number of times you just see Tielemans looking like Xhaka's popping up behind him, Xhaka's going out to the flank, and Tielemans is, do I follow him? Do I not follow? He starts to follow him, and then Zinchenko comes into the space that he's leaving behind him. So I think it's really interesting. It's made us a lot less predictable. And I also think the other thing about it is when we had Granit Xhaka playing as a sort of one of two holding midfielders, I guess, if Granit Xhaka lost the ball, or if there was a counter-attack, he was the one that had to make the tackle to stop the counter-attack, or he had to chase back, or he was the one that got caught out because he turns too slowly with his back to goal, which we know when he's facing our goal, he turns too slowly. He's one-footed. It's obvious which way he's going to go every time. I think Granit Xhaka's a different player when the game's ahead of him, or when he's facing the other way, at least. You even saw it last week early on. Fofana nicked the ball off him because he got it a little bit flat-footed facing our goal, and Fofana stole it and nearly scored when it was still 0-0. So to have Xhaka not facing our goal, or at least not when he receives the ball, ever, and to have him playing in the opposition half and facing their goal, I think he's really, really valuable. And I think we also underrate, you know, if we were to take him out for a Tielemans or put Fabio Vieira in that role, I think you lose a lot of physicality, a lot of height in the team as well. So I think that's maybe underrated in terms of why we might keep Granit Xhaka in the team longer than a lot of people were hoping for.
It is interesting, though, sort of keeping him away from the danger areas, and I mean the areas where Xhaka finds himself in danger, you know, rather than anything else. But that's, you know, that might be part and parcel of why this is happening. But I think it's also fair to say that he does have the technical ability to do the job that Mikel Arteta wants him to do. And I said this to Philippe on the main pod today, that he moves the ball faster. It's clear he's moving the ball more quickly. And it's great to see, and he's having a big impact.
And when he's arriving in the final third, he gets on the end of a lot. Like he seems to really read where to move and when to move and where the spaces are. There was even, you know, before there was the header and there was the goal, obviously. It was also in the first half, he made a run from deep after we were building up, and Partey, he was inches away from putting him through one-on-one, basically. You're looking, you're like, why the hell is Granit Xhaka running through like one-on-one with the goalkeeper? But with Jesus dropping into different positions, those gaps do appear, and that's been a problem for us. Is Odegaard isn't really a player who runs into those gaps. A friend texted me last week, just I think sort of in the first 20, was just imagine like peak Aaron Ramsey in that position right now, getting on the end of things and making those runs. And obviously Xhaka's not going to pull off goals and spectacular touches and burst past defenders as often as we'd like when he's in those positions. But the fact he's even getting in them suggests A, he's not doing a bad job, and B, maybe at some point if somebody else is in that role, we could get a hell of a lot of end product out of them.
So we go to Bournemouth, and I'll ask you a little bit about Bournemouth now in a second. But it is interesting, of course, that Mikel Arteta's first game in charge was away at Bournemouth, and the team we picked that day was Leno, Maitland-Niles, Socrates, Luiz, Saka at left back, Granit Xhaka, Lucas Torreira, Reece Nelson, Mesut Ozil, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and Alexandre Lacazette. And only two of those players are going to be in the team tomorrow. The substitutes that day were Mustafi for Socrates, Joe Willock came on for Mesut Ozil, and Nicolas Pepe replaced Reece Nelson with about 6 minutes left, which is a precursor for almost every appearance he's had since under Mikel Arteta. But there you go. I mean, what a stark difference it is in the starting lineup. I know it's 2.5 years ago, but it's chalk and cheese. And interestingly, Aaron Ramsdale was in goal that day for Bournemouth. I just had a quick look at the stats. Ramsdale's passing, he made attempted 19 passes with a pass completion rate of 89.5%. So 90% of his passes were completed for a Bournemouth side that probably didn't have as much of the ball as we did. Bernd Leno, 22 passes, 59.1%. Wonder, is that the day Mikel Arteta said, who is this young, strapping, blonde lad in goal who passes the ball like me when I was in my defensive midfielding pomp? Maybe not.
And then he let Sheffield United snatch him away anyway.
Well, look, he got his man in the end. You know, patience is a virtue in football and many other things, but he got there. He got there in the end. So it is chalk and cheese. What are you expecting from Bournemouth tomorrow beyond, as one intrepid reporter at the press conference today pressed Mikel Arteta on Scott Parker's fashion? Isn't he a fashionable guy on the sideline? He asked him. I know you've got to try and find angles and stuff in a press conference, but Jesus Christ.
I'm sure Pep Guardiola was thrilled with that line of questioning.
Yeah, Mikel Arteta said, he was always like that as a player, and I think he presents himself really well. I mean, what the fuck else are you supposed to say?
Yeah.
I mean, he does look like a guy whose clothes come from, like, you imagine every year the designers at fucking, what's that brand? Fucking.
You're going to have to give me more than that.
It's an English brand. I can't remember.
Like,
not Topshop, but that kind of, like, is it Ben Sherman? Not quite Ben Sherman, I don't know.
Top Man,
something, yeah. But like the designs that they rejected, Scott Parker bought them all and made his own clothes out of all of those.
What doesn't make it into H&M?
Yeah. Anyway, we've got sidetracked onto Scott Parker's fashion sense. What are you expecting from Bournemouth? Because, you know, they do have a style of play which they like to try and implement. They didn't really do it against Manchester City, and you can understand why you don't come out and play against Manchester City. And it was hard at times for City maybe to break them down. It certainly made it life difficult for Erling Haaland to get involved. I think he had about minus three touches in the game. Do you think they will have seen enough from Arsenal's opening two games to think maybe we've got to be cautious in this one as well?
That'll be interesting if we keep playing well. That'll be the next test, I guess, is teams that start to treat us with a bit more respect and going away from home and really have to break sides down the way that they maybe play a little bit more against Man City or Liverpool when they play those sides. So that'll be interesting. I imagine we will face a really defensive Bournemouth, long ball football. I don't know if Dominic Solanke's back. He scored so many goals in the Championship last season. Mm. But if not, I know that Kiefer Moore has played the first two games of the season. This big lump of a Welsh striker, and he's perfectly suited to long ball football and getting his elbows out into centre halves. I imagine that he will be well suited to that anyway. If they play that way, I'd expect them to play that way. I know they've played a back five in the first two games. The fact that they beat Aston Villa, I think, in the opening game, obviously they'll have some confidence playing at home again. But I also think it reduces the pressure on them to get a result. I think when you've been promoted and if you go into sort of the third or fourth game and you don't have any points on the board yet, then confidence is low. There's pressure to get a result and maybe they would come out a little bit more. Having beaten Villa on the opening day, I think it will be very much, you know, keep things tight, 0-0 for as long as possible, nick a goal. I do think that's what we'll come up against. And it'll be interesting because it's, you know, in both of the games so far, that's not something we've faced yet. We played well, I think, pretty much throughout last week. We played well for the first half against Palace and we dug in and did what we have to do in the second half against Palace. I think this will be a very different challenge to the one we've had so far. And I'm quite looking forward to it. I think that teams that we've struggled with over the past few years, breaking defences down, but the addition of Gabriel Jesus in particular, and not just him, but what else he adds to the team, and, you know, that rotation of positions that we talked about, the fact that there's now a threat down the middle, there's a threat on the right, there's a threat on the left. I don't think you can sit down as Scott Parker and his staff this week and watch teams who sat back and defended for 90 minutes against Arsenal last season and say, right, that's our answer.
Yeah, because that's how you do it.
Because we have so many... Yeah. different ways of attacking and causing threats now, that, you know, Jesus alone offers so much of that. teams, it might take a little while. I think we can use it to our advantage to figure us out. And especially, you know, we think, oh, the teams will figure us out, but Bournemouth won't play. Like, we've always known Brendan, and we talked last week about not being that worried about Leicester because Brendan Rodgers is never going to just sit back and park the bus. Teams who do want to do that against us, well, there's not a blueprint for it yet. So once we've had the first bad result or a couple of bad performances, you might start to see that. I don't think right now that there's an obvious way to stop us or to beat us. And as long as that's the case, teams will be second guessing themselves. So I think we'll get that approach from Bournemouth, and it'll be, as I say, interesting because we've not come up against it so far this season. But I'm not heading into this one thinking, as I would have last season, that that's definitely an Achilles heel of ours.
No, I agree with you. And it's a challenge. It's one of the challenges that we have to overcome, isn't it? That things that you weren't that good at, you have to improve on. And certainly a team that sat back and made life difficult for us and denied us space. We didn't really have the guile or the movement or the pace in the final third to pull them apart the way you need to. You get that horseshoe, as we've often talked about, but you don't have the incision or the incisiveness, I should say, to find those passes. And again, another one is like, what happens if we go behind? As we had struggles with that last season, that's another one of those things where we have to be able to turn things around, and those players have to be able to do it. But I'm assuming you're just thinking more of the same from an Arsenal perspective. Build on what you did against Leicester. Obviously, it's going to be a different game. Bournemouth won't be as open, but you know, if you're Martinelli, if you're Jesus, if you're Saka, if you're Odegaard, you'll be looking at the amount of possession that you're going to have in the opposition final third, certainly in the opposition half, and looking to hurt them in as many ways as you possibly can.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think we'll get a team up against us. Like, I was looking at the pass completion that the Bournemouth centre-backs had in their first two games of the season. And even against Villa, it wasn't high. They've not come up, I don't think, and said, right, let's do it our way and let's try and play through teams. And I think sometimes teams can come up, and I admire that a lot, but it's very, very ambitious to try and play that way. There was a little bit more of it, I think, against City last week, trying to play out from the back instead of just lumping the ball away. And then, as we know, against City, it just comes back at you immediately. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if they do go long up to the striker and try and get bodies around him and play that way. If they try and play out from the back, I think that's another way, that even against a team that sits back, that you can create chances. And our pressing in the first couple of games has been really, really good. We boxed Palace in their own half for the first half of that game. We've consistently at the end of last season given teams problems with our pressing as well. So whichever way they decide to play, I think we can handle the long ball and get bodies around a big lone striker. And I also think we can deal with the sort of, they play out from the back and it gives us chances to nick the ball higher up the pitch. So, yeah, you couldn't ask for a better start than this. We've won the first two games and then you play a promoted team third. Yeah. And you play a promoted team, not like Brentford last season when they'd come up and it's away on the first match day and they're playing in front of a crowd for the first time in a year and a half or whatever it was. Yeah. You know, Bournemouth have had their first home game out of the way. They've had their first defeat last weekend, and it's a huge, huge chance, I think, to get a third win in a row on the board. I saw earlier that it's not since 2004 that we've won the first three games of a Premier League season.
Wow.
Which feels completely mental. We were still in the middle of the unbeaten run at that point. So that's completely mad to me that since the team that went unbeaten won the first three Premier League games of a season, we haven't done it again.
It's overdue.
It's hard to. We could do, yeah. What a way to start the season after the horrors of last year. And just to put yourself in a position straight from the off.
Mm.
I think last year, you can talk about so many points last year where the season went wrong and different results. We threw it away at the beginning or we threw it away right at the end. Liverpool play Man United on Monday. We're going to go, if we win on Saturday, then we'll go into the fourth game of the season either 9 points clear of Man United or 5 or 6 or 7 points clear of Liverpool. Mm. So
it's crazy.
Yeah, we've got such a great opportunity here to have a brilliant start to the season.
All right. Well, look, let's hope they can make it happen and they stay focused and don't take anything for granted. Just a couple of things before we finish off. Ted Baker was the fashion thing that I was thinking of in relation to Scott Parker. So there you go. I knew it was a first name and a last name. So Ben Sherman, it wasn't Ted Baker. It was. And just as we're talking, David Ornstein has just tweeted, Arsenal in talks with Nice about sending Nicolas Pepe on loan. Not done, but discussions ongoing with hope it gets there. Arsenal's chances of signing a new winger have always thought to have depended on the 27-year-old winger leaving. So maybe that is part of the Marquinhos decision at this moment in time.
And as you said, playing Fabio Vieira there.
Yeah, it could well be.
Because if we lose Pepe and we don't sign anybody else, then we're going to need either Vieira or Marquinhos to play there this season.
That's very true. And I guess it'll be interesting to see whether or not Pepe is involved. I mean, there's all these stories going around about Tielemans and Fofana this weekend for Leicester. They're not going to play because they're on the cusp of moves, and it could well be that Fofana goes to Chelsea and Tielemans, as we know, is somebody who's been linked with us. So maybe that idea could apply to Nicolas Pepe. Whether he's in the squad tomorrow, we'll have to wait and see. But look, as you said, let's hope we can get 3 wins in a row. As ever, Lewis, thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrew. Have a good weekend.
You have a great weekend too. Don't forget, James and I will be here tomorrow, Sunday, with an Arscast Extra, because the game happens tomorrow. So we'd be a bit premature doing the Arscast Extra before that. Phil and I will be here with an All or Nothing podcast for you tomorrow, which will help you pass the time in the build-up to an evening kickoff. So we'll have that for you, and James and I will be here on Sunday, as I said. For now, though, thank you very much, as always, for being here, and we will catch you on the next one.